And very last question for the show. Tracy Mortar has been in touch with a biggie. She wonders whether there's such a thing as free will. What are your thoughts on that? Martin, do we have the choice to make decisions in our life, or is it all predetermined?
So, that's a great question. If we could answer it here and now, we would all be getting a Nobel Prize. It's, for me, one of the holy grail of basic neuroscience research today, and that pun was intended. You know, for centuries, the study, shall we say, of free will has really been confined to, you know, the area of philosophy and theology. But I think now it's almost impossible to think about the issue of free will without some sort of neuroscience input, without some sort of physiological appreciation of decision-making mechanisms. And that the central question is, you know, are our decisions a consequence of simply processing input through our brains, resulting in output, which would be our behaviour, or derived from some sort of internal signal, you know, that comes from where we don't know. So as a neuroscientist, the latter seems more unlikely, because it's just so, it seems mythical, you know, where is this internal signal coming from? However, we can't absolutely say that that's not the case until we can answer or provide evidence in favour of the former, you know, that our behaviour is under external environmental stimuli.
I mean, my own view, and this is just a personal view, is that our brains, our neural circuits in our mind, are formed based on our experiences, and those circuits change structure based on what we're exposed to, and then the structure of those circuits actually decides for us how we're going to react to a given situation. So we'll react to a given situation based on our prior experiences of the world around us. And how we perceive the world around us is based on our prior experience. And so therefore everything almost is predetermined. That's just my own personal view. I don't know whether you've got anything to add to that.
It's a great question, and I think, you know, if will were that free and decision making were that pure, I for one would be out of a job tomorrow, because I think it's, you know, we're not all Bertrand Russell purely kind of logical beings, and I think you see that very much clinically, because how we're feeling and what's gone on in our lives, to just go back to your point about prior experiences, can affect what we want to do and what we think we're going to do, and our decision making can affect it enormously. And one of the things that we see clinically is where we work with the issues, both at the kind of current kind of symptoms level and at a deeper level going back, is often you deal with, say, you know, past trauma effectively, it can really free up more effective decision making processes and help people to think more clearly about actually what they do want to do with their own free will.
I mean, I think you only need to look at the things that people working in marketing use to encourage us, sort of these sort of nudge techniques to encourage us to buy. I mean, things as simple as, in the UK, we would normally scan a shelf from left to right, so you put the product that you really want someone to choose on the right-hand side. You know, these sort of very simple things that so powerfully affect even very small decisions that we make. I think you're right in terms of, you know, the experiences that we have been exposed to will affect the way our brains develop, and that will also affect the experiences that we then go on to have in the future and the situations that we choose to be a part of. And yeah, it sort of has this cycle.
Yeah, and without trying to be controversial, you know, from a purely neuroscience perspective, you know, it is conceivable that what we have developed through evolution, with the complexities that have developed in the human brain, you know, have produced the illusion of free will, you know, this idea that we have free will, which, you know, sort of drives us forward, you know, and gives us things like hope, you know, and maybe to put that more on a sort of physiological basis, you know, our prefrontal cortex, you know, is the most evolved part of the human brain compared to other species. And what we have evolved that other species don't have is things like, you know, appreciation of beauty and creativity, and we can produce beautiful music and works of art. Arguably personality is, again, it's conceivable that, you know, this could be a consequence of this very complicated, intricate network of neurons and the brain. So it's, again, conceivable that the input, the environmental information that we receive from birth or even pre-birth, you know, is processed in such a complicated manner that the output, that what we see as behaviour, is simply an output of a very, very complex piece of machinery, and that would be the deterministic argument against the existence of free will, But whether or not that's the case, we really don't know.
And so this big prefrontal cortex that humans have evolved to have is basically just a big processing unit that allows us to bring in lots of information from prior experiences and prior environments and the current environment and process that quickly in order for us to come up with a decision outcome.
That could be the case, yeah. It could be.
And I mean, I also think it depends at the level that you want to analyse this question at or look at this question or you know, in terms of things like vision, I mean, we don't see every single thing that enters our visual field, and we use some sort of quite high level expectations and impose these expectations and predictions to actually see things sometimes that make the most sense in terms of what we're expecting, but aren't quite exactly what's there. I mean, the hollow mask illusion, which you can see on YouTube, is one of them. I mean, yes, these things might have huge influence on the decisions that we make, but we still have that feeling that we're doing things, and those feelings and that hope and that anticipation and the idea of weighing up those decisions.
And to end the podcast on a slightly more positive, hopeful note.
From a clinical perspective, one of the things that we're interested in is increasing people's options and choices, because one of the things we know is when we're stressed, low or depressed, we often feel like we've got very constrained choices. At worst, we can feel trapped, and that's a very unpleasant way to feel. So there are various ways of either kind of manually setting out the options that we might, courses that we might choose to follow, or using things like meditation that probably do changes at a neurophysiological level, via which means we can see that there are different avenues, different new and different things that we can do that can ultimately lead us to feel better. So actually, you know, it's taking into account, there might be a processor in there, but it's actually about looking at the complexity, the whole context, to see the available options that are there for us.
And that's all we have time for this month, unfortunately. Thanks to all those who took part in the programme: Martin O'Neill, Catherine Manning, Roger Kingley, Liz Fraser, Kat Arney and Peter Oliver. I'm Hannah Critchlow, and we'll be back again next month with the next Naked Neuroscience podcast to open our minds. I'm going to be reporting from Milan with the breaking hot neuroscience news that is being presented at the Federation of European Neurosciences conferences. You can subscribe for free to Naked Neuroscience podcasts on iTunes, or you can find us on thenakedscientists.com/neuroscience.